Dr. Amra Zakanin, who is with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, serving as a physician and medical epidemiologist. She has been part of a new group since 2010, leading the CDC, which is dedicated to developing scientific evidence base for use of non-pharmaceutical interventions for infectious disease control, focusing on pandemic influenza. And I'll turn it over to her.
Great, thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. So I'm going to start before too long, but first I'd like to mention that neither I nor any of my co-authors have any potential conflicts to disclose today. As it was mentioned, I work with a newly formed unit that emerged in 2010 after our most recent influenza pandemic. And the question might arise, why are we interested in schools and what are we doing in school preparedness session? So hopefully my background slide might answer some of these questions. Schools are a very important venue for influenza transmission in communities, and that is due to both the setting-specific characteristics as well as host characteristics. So it's a very congregate setting where people sit shoulder to shoulder in 20s or 30s or sometimes even more. They are congregate by age group. They include children who are usually more susceptible to newly developed strains. Children also shed virus longer, and they are much more effective transmitters than adults due to their not-so-hygienic habits. So, for all of these reasons, schools are of great interest for us, and unfortunately, closing schools is thought of as a measure, community intervention measure, community mitigation measure in pandemic influenza. This is a not popular measure. We fully realize that. There is already growing body of evidence that it is effective measure, and it actually does what it's supposed to do. However, the unanswered question is when it is worthwhile. Concern is that unintended consequences related for closures may be important and significant for households, communities, and schools themselves. So when our unit was formed, we immediately asked, okay, what do we know about those unplanned closures? Unplanned closures being anything what's not holiday in school calendar. How frequently are they occurring, and what other preparedness group might have learned from that, and what can we learn from them as we prepare for future pandemics? And of course, as every good scientist would do, we first went to literature and we found nothing. We were trying to find any data about it, and we were unsuccessful. So we decided we would come up with something. So we came up with our own methods, and we wanted to do something what would be really least disruptive. And that was based on daily searches of Google, Google News, and LexisNexis to identify public announcements of unplanned school closures during two school years, from August 1st, 2011, through June 30th of this year. So our library at CDC was running daily this search, identifying those public announcements, and our team was collecting minimal data from those announcements on school affected, start and end day, and causes of those closures. Very low-tech, low sophistication project, just to give us some context to work with. So for the purpose of this project, we defined unplanned school closure event as any public announcement of the decision to close school for one day or longer. We were not looking for announcements where schools were closed for a few hours. We were not interested in those. District-wide closures were those where announcements would say that the entire district would have closed, and individual school closures where only one school was affected. So for the purpose of this project, we grouped the causes of school closures into five large groups: weather, natural disaster, structural or utilities problem related with school, environmental problem, or illness occurring at school. Some examples of causes, original causes stated in public announcements, are shown on this slide. In addition to these five large groups, we also found the announcements on closures related to violence, to teacher strike, and other causes. So we have two school year worth of data, and we have conducted data analyses for this presentation, using procedures that are appropriate to account for correlation of results by events. And we have also mapped the data using the R package to be able to show it today to you. So we'll start going over our results in a moment. So we have found almost 21,000 of unplanned school closure events lasting one day or longer in these two school years. Most of them, or 67%, were announced as the district-wide closures, and about a third were announced as individual school closures. So when you are doing this type of project, we were finding what we find. So more than half of the announcements had only one date mentioned. So these are indicated in light green on the bar with one day of numbers of school day lost. So where school reopening date was not available, we assumed that the closure lasted only for that date, for when it was announced. About 8,000 school closures had both school date beginning of the closure and end of closure announced. And as you can see, those that are shown in dark green, there is still great preponderance of shorter closures lasting about one day, and definitely greater preponderance of closures lasting less than 4 days. The closures in both school years were reported or found to have occurred in virtually all states throughout the United States. First year of our project registered about 4,400 school closures, and second year almost fourfold. So this is the first time that we are doing something like this, and we don't know, you know, what is normal, what is out of normal, but we were impressed by this striking difference between two school years. In terms of the range of days of school lost, in the first year, there was one event that lasted as long as 20 school days. That was an individual school that closed in Indiana following a tornado strike. And in second year, of course, it was dominated by Sandy, as I'm going to show later on. So some of the causes of these almost 20,000 school closures are listed here. Most, by and large, are related by weather. Some weather events account for 80%. Second largest cause is natural disasters, accounting for about 14% of all closure events in our data set. That is followed by school building problems, illness, about 1%, violence, 1%, and then less than 1%, environmental problems, teacher strikes, death of a staff member or student, and other causes that were multiple and different, varied. In the remainder of this presentation, I'm going to highlight the two biggest causes, weather and natural disaster, and the cause that we are very interested in, which is illness-related closures. So in the weather-related school closures events, as you can see, that is the biggest leading cause, about 80% of all closures, and this is what is really driving this huge increase from one school year to another, with the most recent school year, 2012-2013, having fourfold number of weather-related school closure events. The previous school year, the first year of the project, the long school closure events of lasting up to 8 days were related to nor'easter. If folks remember that, there was early snow and ice, and this is what caused this event. The second year of the project was related really with rain, actually two events, rain and snow. They were related with the longest and most pronounced geographically closures. Natural disaster related school closure events, again, a huge difference between two school years, very impressive. In the first school year of the project, 2011-2012, there were about 530 natural disaster-related events. Three large natural disasters were related with many of those. One of them is Hurricane Isaac, or Tropical Storm Isaac. And an in-depth investigation of Isaac-related closures will be presented in the last talk of this session, so please stay. And there were other two that were related with the Hurricane Lee and Irene. And those are related with the longest closures in the first year of the project. The second year of the project was dominated by Hurricane Sandy. And we have heard Sandy-related talks yesterday. In our project, it was extremely impressive that school closures actually related with Sandy in the announcements were reported in 19 states and District of Columbia. They were related with about 1,600 district-wide and more than 600 individual school closures. The loss of days ranged from 1 to 12 days. So it was a huge, enormous disaster related with a huge number of schools that was affected by this disaster. One more interesting thing that I want to mention with natural disaster-related events is that unlike all other categories where median length of the closure was 1 day, for natural disasters, the median is 3 days, and on average, they last about 3.7 days. So they are longer closures than the other categories. Now I'd like to highlight the illness-related school closure events that our project registered. Much smaller numbers than the other two categories, but again, second school year was characterized by much greater number of illness-related closures. There was no huge geographic pattern here. The school closures have occurred kind of scattered throughout the U.S., except for a little bit of clustering in Kentucky and Tennessee area. The illness-related school closures have been shorter on average. They ranged between 1 and 4 days. So among the events that were type of illness that were related with school closure, the respiratory infectious disease really dominates the picture. And in this category of respiratory infectious disease, when you look at what is the original cause stated, most of those announcements, 65%, say influenza. About 30% name it as flu-like illness. And then there were a few that were related with pertussis and some other descriptions. So how does this all pan out when we compare it with the influenza trends in the U.S.? This is a very complicated slide, and I'll try to walk us through it. On the x-axis are weeks of the report, shortened by the summer season of July and August. On the y-axis on the left-hand side is number of school closures events that we have identified. And school closure events were plotted by these three broad categories, respiratory being shown in light blue. So if you look at the light blue bars, you will notice a very seasonal trend in both school years, with the second school year of the project being much higher than the first one. And now if you pay attention to the right-hand side y-axis, it shows the weighted proportion of influenza-like illness in the Sentinel surveillance sites that CDC collects. And the yellow line shows the national trend of influenza-like illness. You see that actually blue bars mirror really well what our national trends of influenza-like illness have been. So it's not an unexpected picture to find, knowing the importance of schools, and something what it interests us a lot with regard to schools being possibly an early warning signal for what is happening in the communities. So I'd like to offer a few conclusions and discuss implications of this project for us. First of all, to review the limitations. Obviously, our reports were limited to online media sources, so we are aware that there is likely selection bias against small schools, rural school closures, where people might use different methods to inform parents and community that schools are not in session that day. Second, we have missing dates of school reopening for many of our announced closures, about half of them, actually more than half. And there is possible bias towards shorter duration, we don't worry that much about it for weather-related closures, which are preponderant in both groups of, with known and unknown reopening dates. But for the second cause of natural disasters, we believe that that may have biased that particular group. And finally, there were a few closures where more than one cause was mentioned, and there may have been misclassification of causes in those. So in conclusion, this two-year project documented that unplanned school closures of one day or longer frequently occur outside of pandemic years, weather and natural disasters being most frequent causes, and most of them being short in duration. Illness was associated in these 2 years with about 1% of closures that we have found, and respiratory infectious disease was the leading factor in illness-related closures, most notably influenza in that category or influenza-like illness. And school closures due to respiratory infectious disease had very similar trend to what our national surveillance systems have shown as trend of influenza-like illness in all ages. Longer closures are rare, and they are most frequently related with natural disasters or extreme weather. Implications for us are that the monitoring of unplanned school closures can document impact of different events, and obviously it's relevant to groups, not only those that are focused on pandemic influenza planning, but also for those that are focused on all hazards planning. And in even in non-pandemic years who are susceptible to influenza-related closures, and most notably, communities are less experienced with prolonged school closures than short-term closures. So for pandemic influenza planning, that really is important for us to consider as we are going forward on how to mitigate non-wanted effects, secondary effects of closures. Finally, I would like to acknowledge a large group of people who have contributed to this project at the CDC and at Oak Ridge Institute in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. And thank you for your attention. Thanks. This is a very good question. Actually, the very purpose of this project was to identify candidates suitable for in-depth evaluation of economic impact. And last talk in this session, we'll talk about one of those investigations.